What is happening, good people? This is Keith, and I'm here to get you high on sports. Let's go! So I wanted to just start off. I'm so excited for this show. I'm going to be introducing my first list on the show. And really, you can make a list of lists in my world, in my universe. I'm just so happy to know I'm not alone. Because all of the sports talk radio that I listen to and that I love and that I critique and that I learn from and all of the names that we all know out there in the nether sphere, they all do lists. So lists must be an attraction every single human being is into. It's an attraction we're into. We love lists. We like writing them. We like scratching off lists, items off our list. We like debating lists. And so I am ready right here, right now, to introduce my first Tuesday tea time. I'm going to be talking about my five top contenders in the NFL to go from no playoffs to playoffs next year. Because it always happens every year. NFL, the parity actually is in the middle. It's not at the top. The NFL is similar to any other NBA team. Any other Major League Baseball team, it's top heavy. Right now in all three major sports, we have about four teams that can win a championship. In the NBA, I think it's a one-horse race. I think it's the Warriors. But in the NFL, it's about four teams every year. It's always the Patriots. Right now, it's Kansas City. They're going to be there for a long time, even now not having Kareem Hunt for a full year and not having Tyreek Hill, I assume. I don't know what's going to come out of that investigation. I've got a very sore feeling about investigations these days, so I don't know what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill. He hasn't been suspended as of right now, but I feel like New England, Kansas City, the Saints, and the Rams, although I see the Rams taking a step down, I think those are the four-pack. The same four teams that we had in our AFC-NFC championships, I don't see them dropping much right now. I don't feel like other teams have caught them. I don't feel like the Bears or Dallas or Seattle has caught New Orleans or the Rams. In the East, maybe the Eagles we could put back in there. I think they're probably closest to being on that fringe of representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. Although they don't have magical Nick Foles now, so who the hell knows? It's going to have to be all on Carson Wentz, and he needs to hope and pray that he doesn't get injured again. He doesn't have a season-ending injury. But those are the four teams, in my opinion. The Colts, I think, could have a shot. To me, they're kind of the Eagles. I feel like that defense might take another step. I don't feel like they did enough in free agency, although I do love that Justin Houston move. I think that's going to be great for them. I think that's exactly what they needed. They have a very tough division. The Colts, that's where the biggest thing the Patriots have had in the last 18 years is their road to the playoffs has gone through Miami, the Jets, and Buffalo. And I've always said this. There is no story that can be told about the New England Patriots over the last 20 years without a chapter on the awfulness of the other teams in the AFC East. So that's where I think the Colts are going to sputter a little bit, is that the Texans, who I don't think are there, they're going to challenge the Colts. The Titans will challenge the Colts. And the Jaguars, I think, will be better. They still have a lot of talent on defense, still have Leonard Fournette, still built to run and ground and pound and play complementary football with Nick Foles now. So I think the Jags are going to significantly improve. But here is my top five list. Four teams that did not make the playoffs to make the playoffs next year. So, number five, I've got the Carolina Panthers. The biggest thing we don't know right now is Cam Newton's shoulder. That's the biggest question mark. Otherwise, they have the makings of a team that can represent the NFC South again, that can beat the Saints, that can beat the Falcons. And that can beat, obviously, the Bucks. I feel like they'll be cellar dwellers again. But I think they'll take a step with Bruce Arians, but a step to me is 5, 6, 7 wins, not 9, 10, 11 wins. And so I feel like the Panthers are my number five team to make the playoffs, a team that did not make the playoffs last year. They have Christian McCaffrey, right? They lost Devin Funchess, but they're going to have some other playmakers there in Carolina. And if Cam Newton's shoulder is healed, I feel like they have a very good shot to turn that thing around, to get Cam being Cam again, throwing the deep ball, looking ugly while he's doing it, but it being effective. So I feel like my number five team for a team that did not make the playoffs to make the playoffs next year, Carolina Panthers. Number four, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right, I love them getting Nick Foles. I feel like he's going to be a perfect fit for what they want to do. He shouldn't have to play hero. He just has to be to the level of competence that Blake Bortles was two seasons ago. That team was so loaded, so confident, had such a nasty defense that they were able to take Blake Bortles to the AFC Championship game. Right? Able to beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh and go on to win the game in the semifinals there, getting to the AFC Championship game. So I really like what the Jaguars have done. I think some of the moves are going to bounce back. The NFL is kind of this every other season situation for teams that are in the middle of the pack. Kind of reminds me of relief pitching in baseball, right? I feel like that's why general managers don't typically spend a lot on relief pitchers, is it seems to be this every other year phenomenon. You catch a guy lightning in a bottle, he gets hot, can't do any wrong for 1 year. The next year, there's some elbow tightness, there's some shoulder pain, there's some discomfort. The guy just never looks the same. The velocity drops, and he goes back to being a journeyman. That's the NFL. You have a team, everything goes right, they stay healthy, a collection and confidence of young players with vets. It all comes together, and they make a nice, long, deep playoff run that makes them relevant. But because they lack the quarterback, they're not a consistent winner like some of these other teams throughout the history of the NFL. To me, that's the Jaguars. And I don't think Nick Foles is great. My contention has always been, if I was Howie Roseman, I would have kept Nick Foles, and I would have looked to trade Carson Wentz. And I know that to a lot of people that sounds like a stupid take, but I'm in the results-oriented business. Most people are in a results-oriented business. Potential ceases to be a result at a certain point. And if the greatest ability of any athlete is availability, then Carson Wentz has failed in the greatest ability. He has not been available. And do I think Carson Wentz, giving every single thing being even, is better than Nick Foles? Absolutely. Absolutely. Throws a better ball. He's more athletic. If you remember through the first 13 games of the 2017 season, Carson Wentz was on pace to be an MVP. I mean, he really set up that Eagles team for success, and then Nick Foles got them over the hump, but he got them over the hump. And again, when the Eagles were 4-6 last year and Carson Wentz went out, again, the greatest ability not being available, he went out, he had a bad back, they were having a bad year, as Nick Foles and his magic for that Philadelphia Eagles team that took them to the playoffs and had them beat a very solid team in the Chicago Bears in Chicago. I don't know if Carson Wentz would have done that. He hasn't played a playoff game yet, Carson Wentz. And so I get it. All things being equal, Carson Wentz is better. But for this team, for whatever reason, Nick Foles had a beat on that Philadelphia Eagles team, and they were better with him. It's a similar argument to the Celtics being better without Kyrie Irving. People would say you're crazy. But if you see how that system functions and flows and what Brad Stevens wants to do, and that collection of talent, the sum without Kyrie Irving is greater than all of its individual parts. But when you put in a superstar like Kyrie Irving, a guy who can score at will anytime he truly wants to, Kyrie Irving can just drop 35 on you and no problem. But the ball stops with Kyrie. He doesn't play great defense. The whole thing doesn't click like we saw it click last year when the Boston Celtics went to a Game 7 against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Something about that system does not click with Kyrie. Something about what's happening in Philadelphia has not clicked with Carson Wentz to put them over the edge. And so I feel like Nick Foles will not be asked to play savior or hero. He's not coming from Indianapolis to Denver like Peyton Manning and expected to put up all-world numbers. He's going to play within the confines of the Jacksonville system. They're going to try to get back to defense and running the ball and him making a few plays. And I feel like Nick Foles can do that better than Blake Bortles. And so I put them at about 10-6, the Jacksonville Jaguars, catching the fifth or sixth seed in the playoffs. That's the possibility. I don't think I'm putting them in as of right now because of some of the moves the Browns made. I had the Browns and the Texans in my playoff scenario a few weeks back. But now with some of the Browns, you know, and I said this, with free agency, with the draft, I have to be able to change my opinion. Things change. I have to be able to change my opinion. And I'm really, really thinking I'm going to come out with another projection now after the draft and after these teams are kind of finalized of where I see the playoffs going. As of right now, I still think the Pittsburgh Steelers will win the division. I know that sounds crazy. I know they lost two superstars, but I feel like the Steelers still have the best quarterback in that division, and they still have the best head coach in that division, although John Harbaugh is very, very close. I still think Tomlin's slightly better. I like him more. I just think they're a more structured organization that has got completely off the rails the last few years, and I feel like they'll be back playing team Steeler football, and I still have them winning the division, but the Browns are really close. And I 100% still, as of right now, feel like the Browns will make the playoffs. So let me continue with my list because the Browns are on this list. However, they are not at number three. Number three, the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons. That's a team that has a ton of talent, both sides of the ball, that really fell off after their Super Bowl mishap, injuries, free agency, hit a couple of different people, and they've lost some folks. There's no doubt about it. They've lost some folks. But I still strongly believe the Falcons have a run in them. The South over the last decade, the NFC South, has been a every other year division where a team every other year wins that division. I mean, there was one year where it just seemed like it cycled. The Panthers, then the Saints, then the Bucks, then the Falcons, then the Panthers, then the Saints, then the Bucks, then the Falcons. It just seemed like the NFC South was a team that kept trading over and over a new division winner. And while I still think the Saints have a clear lock on that division, I think the Panthers and the Falcons have a very strong case that they could push for a division title if a few things go right, and absolutely could push for a wild card spot. So number three, the Atlanta Falcons. Number two, the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers. I feel like it was tough for me between actually the Falcons and the Vikings. And I'm picking the Falcons only because I like Matt Ryan more than Kirk Cousins. I like that defense. I think they're still, if they can stay healthy, I think they're still trying to hit their peak, where I feel like the Vikings defense has peaked and they're now on the downside. And I just don't trust Kirk Cousins. I don't trust him in any game versus any big quarterback. And you're going to have to beat the Bears twice. You're going to have to beat the Packers. You're going to play them twice, right? The Lions are probably going to improve a little bit this year. So they have a tough division. And so I just don't see the Vikings. The Vikings were 9-7 or 9-6-1 last year. I feel like they're an 8-18. And so I could have put the Vikings on this list. I'm choosing to go with the Packers. And let me tell you why. It's only because of one reason. It's not Adrian Amos. It's not the two edge rushers. You know, it's not Preston Smith. It's not the two edge rushers that they picked up. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's pure Aaron Rodgers. He is the best, most talented quarterback I've ever seen in my life. Now, I've gone into this debate extensively. That does not make him the greatest of all time. I wouldn't even put him on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest of all time. He's just the best player that I've seen. He has the most gifted talent that I've seen, the most God-given talent. His ability to, how he throws a ball, his deep ball is ridiculous. His ability to slide and move and avoid pressure and to play offbeat. It really is. I've just seen it for a decade plus now. It is so frustrating to a defense what Aaron Rodgers is able to do. He makes throws that are just, I don't believe any other quarterback can make. Maybe Russell Wilson's close, but I feel like Aaron is absolutely better than Russ. Right? And so there's only one reason I'm going to put the Packers at number two, and that's number 12. I just cannot see them missing the playoffs another year in a row here. I just can't see it. I don't feel like it's going to happen. And in fact, I have such little faith in Mitch Trubisky, such little faith that Mitch will take the step the Bears are going to need him to take. I could see the Packers winning that division. I could see Chicago now getting the first game to celebrate 100 years of the NFL, which I think was the right move of the NFL. This is a big thing. 100 years. I just saw this was 100 years of the Grand Canyon being made into a national park. Right, we're just celebrating that. So just think about that. The Grand Canyon became a national park in the same year the NFL football, the NFL became part of America. Right, two of these huge landmarks of American way of life. Seriously, there's a parallel between the Grand Canyon and the NFL, and it's amazing what George Papa Bear Hallis was able to do coming out of U of I, coming from playing for the Yankees. Little known fact, did you know that the outfielder that replaced George Halas in New York? It was Babe Ruth. Halas got replaced by Babe Ruth in New York, and the rest is history. He went on to play this little sport he called American football. And look what we have now 100 years later. I think the NFL did a great job giving one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports, probably the greatest rivalry in football, the Packers versus the Bears, putting it in Chicago so you just get a bigger venue, can make everything bigger in Chicago. And so I feel like that was the right decision. It's going to be a huge event. They're going to line up big stars to play in a concert in Grant Park. It's going to be a massive turnout. It's going to be this awesome experience. And the Bears with Super Bowl hopes, I feel, will fall flat on their face like I've seen for years and years and years. The only thing that really gives me hope is that the Packers are breaking in a new coaching staff. They're breaking in new free agents. Sometimes that takes a while to gel. The Bears are returning 20 of their 22 starters, right? They're at home. The Bears should win that game. They're better than the Packers as a team right now. They truly are. But number 12, as long as he is under center for the Green Bay Packers, they have a chance to win any single game. He can get hot, and it can be over, and the Bears can find themselves 0-1, and that can lead to the Packers going on to a 10-6, 11-5 type season and wrestling the NFC North title away from the almighty Bear. Right? I could see it happening. I don't think it will, because I feel like the Bears are talented enough, are the most talented team in the division. I feel like the Bears are the Vikings of 3 years ago. There's a lot of parallels. In my next segment, I'm going to get into that Bears-Viking parallel because I was thinking a lot about it. Tons of parallels, the Bears of 2018 to the Vikings of 2015. But that being said, the number one team I see on my playoff list of a team that was not in the playoffs last year, the Cleveland Browns. I cannot believe those words are coming out of my mouth. I cannot believe that I have the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Cleveland Browns in any sort of list that has to do with success. But here we are, folks. Here we are. I feel like the Browns are loaded to bear. They've been building this roster right for a long time. They got rid of Hugh Jackson, who I think was a dark cloud over the organization, who did not know how to run that football team. He may have been a good offensive mind, but he was a clear disaster as a head coach. If you win one game in 2 years, I have no idea how that man did not get fired after the 2017 season. And then to see him on Hard Knocks and how he is and how he handled his staff, it was just a nightmare and a mess. I feel like there's going to be as much stability in Cleveland as there's been since Bill Belichick was there 25 years ago. And I feel like this will be the Browns' first playoff appearance. And I believe it's been about 15 years. It's not as long as I thought. I thought it went back to Belichick, but I feel like they made it in the early 2000s. And yeah, crazy as that may seem. But right now, look, you've got Baker Mayfield, one of the up-and-coming bright young stars in the NFL, right? You saw the accuracy. You saw his ability to move around in the pocket. You saw that coming together offensively with Freddie Kitchens as the offensive coordinator. He's now the head coach. That will be the only thing, in my opinion, is having a first-year head coach, Freddie Kitchens, who was a quarterback coach last year, but that seems to be all the rave these days, is hiring, you know, guys who in years past would have no reason to be a head coach. Now they're the head coach. That's the only thing keeping me from saying they're going to win that division. I say they're a 10-6 team. You now have Odell Beckham Jr. You have Jarvis Landry. You still have Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson. You're getting Kareem Hunt. The offensive line is fairly solid, not great, but solid, and it's an improving defense. I still don't feel like they're a great defense, but that defensive line can give people fits. Saw them give Pittsburgh fits last year. That defensive line could be really good. I still feel like they're missing a few key pieces. I don't like what they have at the safety position. I don't love their linebacker core right now to be an elite defense, but they have an up-and-coming lockdown corner in Denzel Ward. They have a ton of talent in Cleveland, and I feel like this is the year they break through. They end the playoff drought. They were 7-9 last year, folks. 7-9. This was a team that won one game in 2 years. They were 7-9 last year. That's incredible. In a year of disarray, in a year where Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley were fired mid-season with a rookie quarterback, with all of these new free agents, all of these new pieces, and they were 7-9. That's an amazing testament. I feel like they take the next step. I'm not quite ready to declare the Cleveland Browns the winners of the AFC North, but I feel like I can be easily convinced. However, they are my number one team that will make the playoffs for the teams that did not last year. So I have the Panthers, the Jaguars, the Falcons, the Packers, and the Cleveland Browns as my top five teams that were not in the playoffs last year that will be in the playoffs this year, right on the outside. Right on the outside, and I want to talk a little bit about this team, is the San Francisco 49ers. I love some of the moves they did. They're going to get one more really solid piece, a contributing piece in the draft. Right, they have the number two overall pick. My prediction is that's Nick Bosa. I feel like Kyler Murray to the Cardinals is pretty much a done deal. I feel like the 49ers with that number two pick are going to get Nick Bosa to go right ahead and pair with D Ford. I love bringing in Tevin Coleman. Now you have Coleman and Jerick McKinnon and still have Matt Breida. So you're going to have this three-way force that Shanahan likes to use. They still need some help on the outside, but I feel like with Garoppolo coming back, Marquise Goodwin should take a step. He had a really rough year personally last year, Marquise Goodwin. And he dealt with some injuries on the field, so right on the outskirts. And it was really close between the Panthers and the 49ers, but I've just yet to see Jimmy Garoppolo play a full year and see what that looks like. But they're going to have the last place schedule. They're going to add some more pieces in the draft. They've already added some things in free agency, so I wouldn't be shocked if they made the playoffs. The biggest thing to me why they won't is Seattle and the Rams. Seattle and the Rams. And I don't feel like the Cardinals should have been a 3-13 team. I feel like Kyler Murray, they're anywhere between 5 and 7 wins. So they're going to take a step up. So that division to me is just rough. Even though I feel like the Rams take a step back, Seattle's going to be there. Whether they should be or not, they're going to be there. And so I feel like the 49ers just have a tougher road than the Panthers do to, say, a 6 seed. And so I could easily see that 49ers thing changing, but for right now, those are my top five. Love doing lists. So happy to be a part of that. And stay with me on the other side of this break. I'm going to go into all the parallels I see between the Chicago Bears of 2018 and the Minnesota Vikings of 2015, and more so the parallels between the Minnesota Vikings of 2016 and what I see happening with the Bears in 2019. So hang right with me. Thanks.
What is happening, good people? This is Keith, and I'm here to get you high on sports. Let's go! I'm pumped up today. I want to get right into this. It came down today that in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, at the gorgeous Biltmore Resort, for those of you who have not had the opportunity to make it down here to the southwest, down to the desert where I currently live, and to visit the Biltmore Resort, it is awesome. It was a Frank Lloyd Wright resort and hotel, and there's just this old classic beauty to the resort. It's now, I believe, owned by a Hilton, or I believe it's owned by a Hilton, one of the big chains, but it's phenomenal. And every year, the brass, the brains behind the juggernaut that we all love, the NFL, they descend upon the desert to get out of their cold weather climates, the majority of them, and come and, you know, do football things here at the Biltmore, here in Phoenix. You know, and in a different time and place, I used to sadly, yes, hang out there and just mildly stalk, just trying to get a peep of, you know, Bill Belichick and Andy Reid and I guess Bears guys at the time. I think it was Trestman at the time. And so I love this week. It's usually, you know, it's the week right before the draft, the last action you get, not the week before the draft, but it's the last NFL action or talk that you get before the draft, in between free agency. The majority of free agency has now taken place, and we know where different guys are going. We know all the different moves that are being made. Not saying a few more trades can't happen, but GMs now in their scouting departments are starting to focus in on the NFL draft. And some of the things that come out of the owners' meetings are rule changes. And a few months ago, I got into this idea of instant replay and instant replay solving the defensive pass interference. And I am pissed off. I'm pissed off. I said at the time, was there an egregious foul in the NFC Championship game? Absolutely. Did the city of New Orleans, did that football team get screwed out of an opportunity to play the Patriots in the Super Bowl? Absolutely. It was egregious. It not only was defensive pass interference, but you could have called unsportsmanlike contact, helmet to helmet. It was as bad a no call as I've ever seen in my life. But that's no reason to continuously change the rules. It's just no reason. Defensive pass interference is by far, the most, how would I say, influential. It is the penalty in all of sports. There is not one sport that has a stronger penalty, a more game-defining penalty than defensive pass interference, because they have not put a limit on yardage. In college, it's a 15-yard penalty. In the pros, it could be 60 yards. It could be 50 yards, 40. It flips the field on what essentially are subjective calls that could be 50-50 either way, for the most part. And I just don't like this idea of the NFL making a complicated, complex game even more complicated and complex. And my rant 2 months ago was all based on this one premise. I get more infuriated than the average NFL fan over officiating. My wife has pointed this out. Friends have pointed this out. I will say that it's a flaw of mine. I agree. I get pissed off. And my wife is very quick to remind me, hey, they're not perfect. The game isn't perfect. Officials aren't perfect. And that players are and need to be trained to just move on. To just move on. They cannot all be Moises Alou after Bartman screwed us out of the 2003 World Series every Cubs fan should have had. Right? Athletes cannot flip out and freak out. They do. Obviously they do. They're super hyper competitive. And if you think us fans want to win, these athletes, that is their life. That is their love, their passion, their joy. They put sweat and time and work into their efforts to be great on whatever field or court they're playing on. And they get pissed off. There's no doubt. You can't separate the fact of competition getting pissed off when the perception of officiating has done them wrong. And that was an egregious no call. There is no doubt about it. But let me tell you, this is a very slippery slope. This is a very slippery slope. Now, Bill Belichick a few years ago said that all coaches within the confines of the same challenge system should have the ability to challenge any play. Holding, pass interference, offside, whatever the play is, they should have the ability to challenge it. And here's where I disagree with. I like that notion even better than the defensive pass interference, because if you're going to go all in on this, go all in and give the coaches control. Right now, what you have, what this rule has said, is that within 2 minutes, the instant replay official will have the ability to, in a moment's notice, right? Because remember, NFL teams run no huddle. NFL teams want to play fast. They're playing faster than ever before. They're getting up to the line of scrimmage, diagnosing plays, and going. And so, within a moment's notice, a replay official is going to have to understand the rule of defensive pass interference, say that there is something happening here, make the call down to the field, look at the play, and then tell the officials on the field to throw the flag. Or, I'm guessing, to pick up the flag. I feel like they've done this so fast and furious, we don't know all the language. But if there is not strong language that tries to test and train officials to make this an egregious foul, I'm talking about like you would have to be straight blind to have not seen this thing. And we all know it. It's like porn, right? Hard to define, but you know it when you see it. You know it. That was egregious. 100 out of 100 people who watch football and understand anything about football would say that penalty in the NFC Championship game was a defensive pass interference. But my fear is that it's going to make a ticky-tack penalty even more ticky-tack. And because it's drawn attention to it, you're going to have officials who just truly don't know what to do, because most of the time, defensive pass interference, it's hard to know. It's a judgment call. There's so much hand fighting and going on and pushing and nudging right at the top of the ball. I mean, the separation on a lot of these different calls is so close, it's hard to tell. And I just feel like it's going to confuse the issue. I feel like it's going to muddle up the game, slow down the game, and I see it as a huge, monstrous clusterfuck, man. I'm telling you right now. And I'm someone who wants to see these things get right, but I'm also in the deep minority that I don't think any instant replay should be allowed. I really don't. I really don't feel like any instant replay should be allowed. So I'm pissed off that they went ahead and they changed this rule. I'd like to hear from other people. Let me know. Drop me a comment. Hit me up on Twitter. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you love it. But here's the thing. We don't know the unintended consequences. And this is a complex, complicated game. Officials in the NFL have more rules to know than any other official in any other sport. They've already made every single game slow to a crawl. You have to go to the booth. And now on defensive pass interference, imagine this. Imagine you think on a fourth down call, your defense stops Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams. Thinks you stopped them cold. Kyle Fuller, huge game, first game of the year. Right, it was announced the Bears are going to play the Packers. First game of the year, which I love, by the way. I think that was absolutely the right move by the NFL. The Patriots have had enough Thursday games to open up the season. They get their Sunday night. That'll be fine. Right? They can go back to hosting next year when they win the Super Bowl again. So I love that the Bears and Packers play, but you're going to have in that first game, you know, 22 seconds left. Packers down by 7. Aaron Rodgers to Davante Adams. Kyle Fuller breaks up the pass. It's a 50-50. No call happens. And it's going to go to the booth. It's going to go to the booth. And you have the real opportunity of 65,000 people in Soldier Field celebrating what should be this tremendous stop, this tremendous play. And all of a sudden, they're going to drop a flag and say, this was pass interference. Packers now get the ball and they get another shot to tie this game up. These things are going to happen. There will be a law of unintended consequences. And the people who will disagree with me will say, well, we're just trying to get it right. And what I'm saying, it's a slippery slope. and that most DPI, most defensive pass interference, and by the way, this rule also calls for OPI, offensive pass interference, which is even more convoluted, which is even more inconsistent. Now you're going to have a situation that should be a subjective, in-the-moment call being broken down frame by frame and putting even more power into the official's hands. So I hate it. I don't like it. I wish we would have less is more in this society, right? It's my argument for America. Our problems that we're having right now is not the lack of democracy. It's that there's too much democracy. It's that we continue to bitch and moan over every perceived mishap or wrongdoing to our lives. So we're going to take to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever is our outlet to bitch and moan. And it's just creating this culture in this country where we are trying to aim for perfection of everything all the time. And we just can't find it. It is impossible. This is an impossible problem you're trying to solve, and I don't like them going forward with it, but that will be the new reality. Apparently, they're going to try it. It's a pilot, but every single pilot we know has ended up making its way into the rule books, and I just think that you're going to have a clusterfuck on your hands, and I don't like it. So, on the other side of this break, I'm going to get into baseball. It's opening day. Opening day tomorrow. I love it. Although it's weird, the Cubs play one game. I haven't looked at other schedules, but the Cubs and Rangers play one game, take Friday off, then play Saturday, Sunday. And then they play Monday, take Tuesday off, and play Wednesday, Thursday. It's a goofy schedule. I know MLB wants to give breaks early on and is trying to tie in breaks because of bad weather that's continued to happen in the early part of the season, but I'm going to get all into that. I'm going to get into trashing the Cubs bullpen and why I feel like the Cubs and their brass and their ownership has missed a dynasty window and why I'm so pissed off about that. So I'll catch you on the other side of the break.